What's up, Kantians? It's Lakota. And on today's episode of Shoot the Shit Sundays, we are joined by the great and powerful Greg Dudson. He recently just graduated from the University of Alaska Anchorage with his MBA. Hands down, one of the smartest dudes in my life, period. And also one of the funniest. So I'm really excited for you guys to hear our conversation and to hear about the topics that we go over. So without any further to say, let's get to the episode.
Coors Banquet, brewed in the Rockies.
What's up, Greg?
Oh, you know, just living the life of an MBA student, man.
Hey. Now, are you enrolled at UAA?
Yeah, I am. I'm in my last semester. I graduate next week, and it'll be, what, like 8 years of business school, because my undergrad was business too.
Yeah, you did business with a focus in marketing, correct?
Yep,
if I was remembering. That's awesome. Yeah.
No analytics, and then no more school ever again, because my God, it's been too long.
Bro. Hey, you know what? But congratulations. You had, I mean, you started in the Army, correct?
Yeah, I did.
And how long were you in the Army for?
7 years.
7 years. Were you in school at all while you were enlisted?
No. So I don't even have a high school diploma. I got into the Army. I did really well academically. The Exposed Fordance Disposal School is a really tough academic school. And then when I got sick and got out, I was like, you know what? I should go to school. And now I have my master's.
That's dope. That's awesome.
High school dropout and MBA.
Bro. Hey, but you know what? Like, high school, I was just having this conversation with my in-laws, because my brother-in-law is in, he's finishing his senior year in high school.
Yeah.
And I they're both educators. And I told him, I was like, look, this school system sucks.
Yes.
It sucks. And high school is so boring. If you looked at me academically, like my grades, you would have thought I was like half a brain.
Oh, like, right.
What is wrong with this kid? Right. And then if you talk to me, you'd be like, oh no, he's three quarters of a brain. Right. Like it's not an accurate representation of like who I am intellectually.
No kidding.
And it's so frustrating. I fucking hated high school.
Yeah, man. it was not cool at all, but you know, I don't know. At least school's going to be over soon. I might actually go into a little bit more education just because I feel like I kind of need to, but
the majority like how, of education. So are you going to do just like drop in classes or auditing, or are you going to take like certificate programs or?
Yeah. So like, MIT has a certificate in design thinking. I'm considering that because I do, I might want to go into product, but I do a lot of customer experience. So.
I might need your help designing labels for my CBD company.
Oh, heck yeah. I actually just did a big old survey where I created like 20 different labels for my survey.
Okay.
And basically like surveyed people to see what were their thoughts on eco labeling. So, you know, basically conservation efforts in marketing. Yeah. So yeah, that might be fun.
Hells yeah. Yeah. We'll talk after this. We'll talk tomorrow. Cause I know you have class.
Yeah.
Dude, that's sick though. I mean, I feel like it doesn't, like a point I was trying to make is that it doesn't matter like where you're at in high school. Like hopefully you've changed since high school, right? Like the ultimate goal is to grow and develop as an individual. And if you don't grow and develop, like what are you doing?
Like, yeah. You know, there's like a few different like schools of thought on what you're going to do when you grow up, as far as like how countries run it, you know. In the United States, they're like, hey, get done with high school, then immediately figure out what you're going to do with your academia. And that's really tough. And I feel like a lot of people fall into this weird thing where they don't know what the heck they're doing. And, you know, nobody knows what the heck they're doing at 18. But in the United States, I feel like we really push people to try and figure it out damn fast. And then, you know, like places like Germany, for instance, they say, well, you know, we know at a very young age that you're going to be more in the trades instead of in academia. And they kind of like gear them up for that. And I don't know which one's right, which one's wrong. One of them says, hey, you have unlimited potential. And one goes, hey, you have unlimited potential in this direction. But I don't know. I think that it's kind of a tough thing to look at, 18-year-olds and under their academic history or their ability to think and then move forward and say, this is who you are already. Pick it, go, run.
Well, and I don't know any 18-year-old who knows like exactly where they're going.
Yeah, no kidding.
Right. Like, honestly. And, you know, the Germany system is very interesting. It was when I was finishing high school in Anchorage, we had foreign exchange students come from Germany that I had befriended. And I still keep in contact with them. And they were in the tracked program. One was in the musics program, had been since she was 12, which is mind blowing.
Right? Yeah, right.
And then, Johan was in, I can't remember. I think it was like engineering or math or something like that. And, you know, you're right. There is to an extent, it does limit you. But I also think it does kind of like point you in the right direction where you can focus on something that A, you'd be good at, and B, because you're good at it, you probably have a passion for it.
Yeah, right? Because kids were like 12, right? That's engineer. True. What were you doing when you were 12? I was like just masturbating too much, being a little weirdo. You know what I mean? Like, you don't know what you're doing when you're 12 years old. Like, how can you say this dude's going to be an engineer, this person's going to be in music when all of their really doing is like playing with Pokemon cards and themselves.
Honestly, yeah. And then they don't stop that until they're probably like 28.
Yeah.
So, dude. I mean, the fact that like even at the age of 18, we say, okay, you're not old enough to drink. You're now not old enough to smoke, but you can go fight in a war. You can possess a gun, and you can fuck up your credit.
Yeah.
So, good luck.
It's kind of crazy the pressure that we put on these kids. And you can, you know, like I do marketing, right? Like I do marketing analytics, the whole schmeal of whatever it is, right? And you look at the psychographics of the younger folks, and they're just kind of like getting fed up with everything. And it's kind of, I'm really interested to see what like today's 18-year-olds are going to be when they're like 33, you know? Because I turned 33 last month, so I'm an old shit. But like, I'm interested to see what those people are going to be like, because it took me like, 30 years to get jaded, and they seem like they're getting jaded at like 18. They're just like, well, fuck this. Why is everything the way that it is, you know?
Well, and when I was 18, I was hypercritical, but I had also picked up a little book called Humanism and Existentialism, Existentialism and Human Emotions. That's what it was, by Jean-Paul Sartre. Fucked up my teenage years. And I picked that book up at like 16 years old. I was I was nihilistic. I was like, nothing matters. Like, this is like so pointless.
That's what you get for
me. Oh my goodness, right? That's what you get for like educating yourself. And, I can only imagine, like I look at my brother-in-law who is 18 and he is very jaded. And I mean, he has stuff going on just like everybody does. And teenagers, their issues are so amplified because they don't see the big picture, right? Like I'm 26. I still don't get the big picture, right?
Yeah. They're going through these formative years, and think about at 10 years old, that 18-year-old you were just talking about.
Yeah.
At 10 years old, you know, maybe just a little bit younger, saw one of the worst recessions in America, in the world, right? They grew up with these formative years in actual recession. You know, we were kind of shielded from a lot of that in Alaska because the oil and the military up here, but people being raised in a recession, and then they hit adulthood and there's this new incredibly big recession. It just is shaping them to be, I don't know, hopefully they are being shaped to be incredibly resilient and not incredibly jaded. But, I guess we'll see in the next couple of years. But these people that are growing up right now, about to be grown-ups, they are something that the world has never seen before. And it's going to be really interesting to see who they are.
It's so interesting that, like, coming from a marketing perspective, because having this information, it helps you and other marketers tailor your marketing efforts towards a certain demographic, right? So it's like, do we need to like lay on the lead and, you know, be a lot more like, I don't know.
Yeah, you're right to a large extent. I mean, I work in telecom, so it's kind of different, but you still do got to keep these people in mind who they are. Like, this person's super old, which is a lot of Alaskans. This person's super old and might not be able to use the computer in the same way to order something, but the super person's super young and they might be able to do everything computer because they grew up literally with an iPhone by the time that they were, you know, 5 years old. So it is interesting to think about those kind of things, but then to think about their overall attitudes and the way that they might view the world, that's considerably outside of marketing, but it's so interesting from, you know, a behavioral perspective. I don't know. These people are going to be different than us, man.
For sure. Well, and I just left my sales job.
Partially
because of COVID, but also partially because I just needed something else. Like, you know, and when you spend so much time doing direct marketing, you know, we call it direct to consumer marketing. Man, it's taxing.
Direct sales is hard.
It is, and that's why they get paid so much. Like, if you're good at it, you can make tons of money. And I made really good money, but it made me even more jaded, right?
Like, imagine.
Oh man, I had no patience. Like, up until like I started like delivering pizzas at Domino's just a couple weeks ago, I was like, man, fuck people. And now I'm like, okay, people aren't that bad. Like,
yeah, back
people
to
are
it.
Actually, yeah, people are actually pretty cool. Like, you know, because you get the door slammed in your face so many times. It's so ridiculous. But you work with telecom in the industry up in Alaska. Yeah. How is it different than maybe working at a telecommunication company in the States? Is there any difference?
Yeah, you know, I'll tell you that it is kind of different, I would assume, right? I did all my professional career in either the military in the lower 48 or basically in telecommunications and academia up here, right? So I would assume that it's kind of different. But the big reason that it's different is because we don't have some of these very large competitors, right? Now, there are two main competitors. I don't want to say who my business is, but there are two main competitors in the state, right? And it's a highly competitive market and nobody can really enter it. So that places a lot of different constraints, and Alaskans have this like affinity for anything that's Alaskan, right? So it is completely different. But what's been interesting is that telecommunications has grown business, whereas everybody else is kind of losing business because people got to go do schoolwork from home, or they're just stuck at home and want more internet, you know, those kind of things. It's pretty interesting to see that telecommunications is growing in this weird period.
Well, massively. I was talking with a colleague of mine, and he had before COVID like really broke out and started affecting the United States rapidly. He had invested in Zoom. He goes, you know, we use Zoom for work. I see that, you know, this could be a trend upwards. And then all of a sudden they shoot up, right? Because everybody's using Zoom, right? And right now, while everyone's isolated, and there's some states that are kind of, they're loosening up a little bit, but while people are home, this is their connection to the outer world for the most part.
Yeah.
So it's such a crazy time to live. This is definitely my first epidemic I've ever lived in, like to this extent. It's so crazy. Thankfully I have like a lot of hobbies that I do from home. Yeah, I mean, the podcasting, I type, I read a ton. I probably read way too much than I need to. I'm just like filling my brain with too much information. But there's a lot of people that are like suffering, that have like mental health issues.
Yeah.
Have you seen any of that like popping up in Alaska, where people are just like losing their minds, getting stir crazy?
Frankly, I haven't really seen anybody with those kind of problems. So I'll just put it back to my perspective, because it's, you know, obviously easier to talk about yourself than the hypothetical, right? Like,
right.
For me, I kind of considered myself like a you know, I'm comfortable in social situations, but I don't need them. And since this has popped off, I've been like, I go to the grocery store and I'm just like begging to talk to the cashier. Like, I'm just like, I can't wait for this whole thing to break and just go hug some strangers and just like sit right next to people at a bar or something. You know, I thought that I was so much less social than I am. And I think that a lot of people are really realizing that, you know, humans are very social creatures. So I know that it's been tough for some people because, you know, for instance, here's an example of somebody I know is having a tough time is this woman I work with. She's a single woman. She doesn't even have any pets and she's working remotely, right? Like that, that is a nightmare scenario for anybody in real estate.
Does she have, well, I mean, the question is, does she have plants?
I didn't ask her that. What a dick move, right? Like I should have asked that.
You should have asked that, like, hey, do you have a ficus or anything?
Right. Yeah. But, you know, the thing is that, like, I think that there are a lot of people that are kind of suffering in silence to get to that extent because we need to be around each other a lot more than probably anybody realized. Even people that say that they are just completely antisocial and that they never want to see anybody, I know that this is driving some of them nuts. Like, this has got to be driving people nuts because, man, we are like pack creatures. Like, we need to be around others, even if you say you're antisocial, right?
Oh, without a doubt. And I'm a homebody. I like being home. I'm not like, dude, since I left Alaska, haven't been to like a bar, a club. Well, that's not true. I've been to a couple bars, but like just dive bars to have a beer with a buddy. That's it. But I've not like gone downtown. I'm actually legit afraid to go downtown Laredo. Cause I it's right there by the entrance by the Mexican border.
And you're I don't speak in general, not because of the virus.
Oh no. Yeah. I'm talking like if the virus didn't exist, like I'm like legit, like I'm not part of that social scene anymore. So me being like a homebody, this isn't too bad. And then of course I work like 40 plus hours a week. So I am leaving the house and interacting with people. I'm considered an essential employee, sir.
People got to get their pizza, dude. If I didn't, you know, I'd be going nuts if I couldn't get some pizza.
Bro, you need the za. So it's just so interesting. And nobody really knows how long this is going to last. You know, we're going on to what, week six for the nation?
Christ, I don't even know anymore.
I don't know either. Do the days blend? Yeah, like, I didn't know. Last night I closed. So we closed at midnight. I didn't leave until like 2:30 in the morning. I got home, slammed a few cocktails, and I was up till like 4:45. I went to bed at 5 and I was up at like 9 a.m.
Oh man.
And I have no idea what today is. It's Wednesday, I'm assuming, because I worked 2 days out of the week so far.
But
it's so nuts. I never would have thought that this would even remotely happen in our lifetime.
Yeah, no kidding. So, well, like up here, like, I know that you guys got like all that. You guys are probably getting too hot down there, but we just started getting sunlight back. Well, we started getting it back a few weeks ago, and now we're full on, you know, sunlight at like 5 a.m. It's making this a lot more bearable for me. A lot of people don't like the too much sunlight. They say it's hard to sleep and everything, but it's been pretty dope. It's making some time like kind of blend together, but at least there's a lot of sunlight, no more darkness and cold.
Well, yeah. I mean, it would be miserable to be in an Alaskan winter, right? Let's say in the middle of January, February, you're stuck at home. It's dark when you wake up, you're home all day. Then it's dark when you're like laying down, like it's just dark. It's miserable.
Yeah.
For my listeners. So I have listeners around the world, which is, it blows my mind that people in Finland are listening to this podcast. So they can probably, they probably understand the same situation as Alaskans.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. We get too much darkness too. And then we get too much lightness. It sucks. But I have, where's the furthest south? I have a listener and I have two listeners in Australia.
Right on.
And, for those listeners and for the rest of the lower 48, Alaska's winter is absolutely miserable. in my mind, because I wasn't a snowboarder. I wasn't a skier. I didn't do any of those like winter sports things. I did winter hiking, but it was dark. Like it was just dark all the time. And then you live there for the summer. At least I did. I stayed as long as I did in my adulthood because of the summers. I kind of miss it. I miss like the sun rising at 4:30 in the morning and then not dropping until after midnight. Here in Laredo, it was like 114 just the other day.
And, that was
miserable.
I'm getting like hot at like 50 degrees right now, dude. 114. No,
bro. In my house right now, it is 71 degrees and I'm sweating. I don't like the heat. I don't like the heat at all.
Why you moved to Laredo then. That makes sense.
Oh man. Well, so, I don't know if I told you, but I'm in the process of becoming a Border Patrol agent.
Right.
So, for, you know, the first quarter of my career as an agent, if I get in, it will be on the Southwest border, but it cannot be within 100 miles of your hometown, Laredo being considered my hometown because I'm a resident here. So I'm going to try and get into San Diego. Because at least there's a beach. If I can be where there's a beach at, I'll be happy. I don't care if it's 125 degrees outside. There's waves.
San Diego don't get that hot, do it?
I have no idea. I don't know. I've never been to San Diego.
Oh, man, it's beautiful. I haven't been there since I was like a preteen.
Oh, man. Were you living there?
No, I just visited a few times. Maybe I've been there since.
Now, you... Did you grow up in Salt Lake City or like in Utah, or did you grow up in Alaska?
I grew up everywhere. I spent the last like several years of my childhood, I guess, in Utah, just outside of Salt Lake. But I grew up a lot of time in Virginia, North Carolina, Salt Lake City, Utah.
Oh, yeah, but like, like Salt Lake City, like you're in Salt Lake City or you're in the surrounding area, like Provo, South Jordan, Lehigh.
The last place I lived was North Salt Lake.
Oh, okay. Got it. You got to remember, Vivint was a, they are based in Provo. So I'm very familiar with the Salt Lake City and my fellow Mormons.
Oh, right. So. Yeah, yes. No, I lived there. I lived in Virginia, North Carolina, Colorado a little bit. My dad that raised me, he died when I was 8, but he was in the Army. So we moved around a lot when I was very little.
Oh, okay.
But then we moved to Utah, and then I got in the Army and then went all over Texas, Alabama, right. Florida, Georgia, Iraq, Alaska, you know.
Where were you at in Texas? Where were you stationed?
Fort Hood. So Killeen, yeah. Near mm-hmm. Waco, just north of Austin.
Yeah, I know exactly where that's at. My wife has family in Waco.
Oh, right on.
Mm-hmm. Like in the Robinson area, so like right next to Waco.
It's a weird little area, huh?
It's different. It's like one of those like old farm towns. Like a lot of that northern Texas area, a lot of it's like rich farmland where like there's tons of ranchers, tons of farms, and then like you have urban sprawl, right? Like Dallas and all that. But Waco's developing rapidly because of its proximity to Fort Worth and Dallas. Like it's close enough to be affected by the sprawl.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And of course, Waco's a college town. You have Baylor University there. Mm. So there's a lot of history and a lot of people that are flocking there either for school or to live like a little bit out of the city, but be still close to Dallas or Fort Worth. I lived in Dallas for the past 2 summers.
Too, oh, no kidding. So.
Yeah, one of the perks of working with Vivint is that we traveled. And this summer, I was supposed to live in Lafayette, Louisiana, before the whole outbreak thing.
The swamp, so, huh?
Yeah, I'd never lived there. I've never lived in Louisiana. I don't think I've ever even been to Louisiana. But I was kind of looking forward to it, just to experience something new.
Yeah, the actual South.
Yeah, well, I've experienced the actual South. I've been I've been to, I was in Birmingham, Alabama. When was that? I think that was last year. I was there for about a week or so, doing a recruiting effort. I've met the South, and that was a weird, those were weird vibes.
Yeah. It's a weird
very
place.
Weird vibes. And I was also, you said you were in North Carolina. What base were you at there?
We lived just out of Bragg.
So, I think my mom was stationed at Seymour Johnson. That's where I was born. Air Force Base.
Air Force. Oh yeah. We were Army. So
yeah. So that's how I ended up in Alaska. My mom was stationed at Elmendorf the first time. And then when she came back as a master sergeant, it was Joint Base, Elmendorf Richardson.
Right on.
Yeah. So how's Amy doing?
She's doing good. She's, well, we, as you know, we got engaged a few months ago when we were in Mexico.
Yes. Congratulations. I'm so excited, bro.
Yeah, me too.
Oh, I'm happy for you guys.
Let me tell you about the engagement when I proposed, right? So we go to this restaurant. Okay, let me go back a little bit further because I didn't want to propose in a restaurant. I wanted to propose at some ruins, right? Now fiance is like paper white though. She is a pale ass woman. So like we go to these first ruins and I'm like, this is going to be my test day to see what it's like. Cause I wanted her to like her pictures and everything, or at least a picture. Mm-hmm. And we're hiking around these ruins. I'm like, oh, it's kind of hot, whatever. It's fine. And I look back at this woman and she is like cherry tomato red and just like sweating like crazy. And I'm like, maybe the ruins are not the kind of place to propose. So we found this restaurant called Alouche in Playa del Carmen. And it is a literal cave. Like you walk down into this cave and I proposed there and it was awesome. Actually, I didn't expect it to be this awesome. We were walking out cause there's a little tour and I'm like, oh, maybe I won't propose tonight because it's not a cool enough place. And I found this little side room. I grabbed this random stranger. I'm like, hey, could you take a picture for us? And I proposed in this cool little room with like, it's in a literal cave, all these like stalag whatever's off the ceiling. It was really cool. So the guy's kind of like, oh, I wish you would have told me. Oh, whatever. We just start walking back through the cave, exploring the place. And a bat like tried to attack my face. It was so crazy. Like we're in this restaurant I just proposed and like we're walking around and this bat like flies directly at my face. Amy said she had, my fiance said she had never seen me move that quickly because a bat tried to get my face.
Bro, that's bizarre.
Yeah.
That is bizarre. You know what? I hear that's a good omen. If a bat tries to attack your face after you propose.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Right on.
Yeah, man. Hey, you guys are good. You guys are nice. Good. Dude, that is so much more romantic than when I proposed to my wife.
Oh, yeah?
Have I never told you the story?
No.
Okay, so I'm terrible at keeping secrets, like, period. And so I'm not a big surprise guy. Like, I don't know how to surprise people. Because I get so excited and I just want to share it.
Just fucking jazzed about what's going to happen, huh?
Bro, like for real. Like for weeks, dude, my heart was just thumping every time I was around April. It was driving me nuts. Well, so I had ordered the ring. There was a ring that she wanted and I ordered it. She's not very materialistic, so that was kind of nice. So I ordered the ring she wanted, but I didn't tell her I ordered it. Came in. I got her parents' blessing when it came in. Probably should have done it before.
Yeah.
And I gave them the ring to hide it. Because at this point, April and I had just, we had just come back from summer, I think. Yeah. Like a couple months prior. And we were looking at getting our own place. So we were kind of in this transitional period where we were living with our in-laws or with my now in-laws. And so I told them to hide it. Like, will you hide this? Because my wife finds everything.
Yeah.
And so that was January, like mid-January. I had called a restaurant, our favorite restaurant in town, and made a reservation. And this restaurant doesn't take reservations. It's like a very like high, like all natural organic food place. And they like, it's so small. They don't take reservations at all. They just come in, get really nice food and then leave.
Right on.
But she made an exception for February 14th. And so I made the reservation, got super excited. I'm like, yes. So I got the ring, I got flowers ready to go. I got the reservation going, like, this is going to be like my ideal proposal. And well, it was probably like February 1st, February 2nd. And April like picks a fight with me because I'm acting weird.
Oh no.
Like I'm just acting so damn shady, bro. I like you would have thought I like murdered someone or something. Like I'm so bad at it. So bad.
Just can't live with the guilt of planning a nice surprise.
bro, if you ever played poker with me, you'd take all my money. Like I can't play bullshit. Can't play poker. Can't keep secrets. I can't. It's bad, right? You're like, how the hell did this guy survive in a sales gig?
Yeah, right.
but I no. So we get in a fight. She thought I was cheating on her, and so we get in this big fight. She I'm trying to leave to go somewhere. I think I was going to the store, and she blocks the door and drops to the floor and is just crying. I'm like, I'm trying to fucking propose to you. Like it came out and. It was just so bad, bro. And she was like, what? I'm like, I'm acting weird because I'm trying to keep this a secret and I don't know how to. And you and you think I'm cheating on you and I'm not. Here's my phone. Here's my laptop. Here's everything. Like, it's just, I'm trying to propose. Like, I'm trying to get everything set up. So she cries and is overjoyed and she goes, well, where is it? I'm like, oh, I'm not giving it to you now. I made all these plans. Like we're going to wait 2 damn weeks and then I'll propose to you. So a few days go by and she's like picking on me, trying to get more information and stuff like that. And then finally one morning, I'm in my pajamas. She's in her pajamas. We look like shit. not dolled up, nothing. And I just popped the question right there in the living room. And of course she said yes. Spoiler alert. But yeah. And we still had the dinner and everything, but it was such a train wreck. And it was one of the few things in my life that I ever planned ahead for because I'm a huge procrastinator.
Yeah.
And I was so proud that I got everything set up and it got stymied by my inability to keep a secret. So
you goober.
Oh man. Well, you know me. So
that's funny. That's a good one.
Yeah. So I love telling that story just because of how ridiculous it is. So, when's the day when are you guys, making this all happen?
Well, if the world ever gets back to normal,
doesn't burn to the ground.
Yeah. We're planning for January 21st in Hawaii, January 21st nice. Of next year. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we really hope that we can. I have no idea if we can do that. Hawaii has locked themselves down. Well, I hope so too. But the thing is that everybody keeps trying to say, hey, we should just end this quarantine because of the economy. And I don't know, that's man. Dumb. Like if you think that a virus is just going to go by goodbye because you hope that it does, then you're living in a different world than me, you know? You're living in a different world than anybody is.
and you know what? It's a simple fact that you're valuing a very intangible thing that you put just so much into, right? The concept of money. Money is imaginary, right? It doesn't exist. We have created it. We've created all of this value.
Exactly.
If we wanted to, the next day we could all be billionaires. Like it doesn't matter, right? It doesn't matter. And so the fact that people are valuing that over human lives, I shouldn't say it on the podcast. I'm not going to say it on the podcast, but there are people out there that legitimately think that this whole COVID thing is a scam.
Oh yeah.
And they think it's not real. They think it's the Democrats ploy to take Trump out and shit like that. It's good hell. Take a step back and look at this situation, right? Look at the situation. It's affecting everyone worldwide, right? So the fact, except for Madagascar, I guess Madagascar
played that game, right?
I, you know what? I've never, I was talking to a buddy of mine and he said, He says he's played it. It's like Outbreak or whatever it is. Do you know the name of it?
I think it's just called Plague Inc. or something.
Okay. I've never played it, but I don't play a lot of games as it is. But dude, from what I've heard, the perfect storm brews in China.
Yeah.
Because of how densely populated it is. So it's going to spread just like it did, and mutate and spread. So,
I just want to get on a soapbox for just half a second. I'm an MBA. I would consider myself pretty intelligent in the ways of business, right? Like, I think that I'm pretty smart in business.
I agree.
And I want to recognize that I'm in a position of privilege that I didn't lose my job over this whole thing. But the thing is that trying to say that getting back to normal should just happen is going to crash economies. We're going to lose more lives and lose more money. And the fact of the matter is that Americans, at least, ought to be saying, government, help me out, instead of saying, let me go back to work, right? Like, we have all of this cash that is literally going to people that already have a lot of cash. It's literally going to people that don't need it. And we should be saying, instead of saying, let me go back to work, saying, hey, help me out, right? Like, we have this government here that we aren't holding accountable, and that we need to say, like, government, you owe me for this. I paid my taxes. I've been a good citizen. You owe me for this. Instead of blaming everybody else and saying we have to go back to work, why aren't we just furious at our leadership for not helping out Americans, right?
Right. I agree.
I don't know. I know that's an annoying soapbox. Everybody has theirs, but I'm like, as somebody with a really high ethical threshold that is in business, trying to make money right now is going to backfire. Like, it's going to end up killing people, and it's going to worsen a recession.
So I 100% agree. And that's one of the reasons. So, not to throw Vivint under the bus, like, Vivint has been great to me. They're a great company. I think the overall service of, like, protecting people is noble. And I think it's a great company and a great business model. But with that said, this whole COVID thing is interrupting the main season of growth for every door-to-door company.
Yeah.
The summer months are when they make their money, right? And so my higher ups were pushing to go to any market that was open to knock doors, and I didn't feel right about it.
Yeah.
And I just, you know, I was like, look, you know, first of all, we work in a very stressful job where it's like, you know, we're 100% commission, and we are going door to door to now sell a smaller demographic of people that have available funds for an alarm or a smart home or cameras or whatever it is, right?
Yeah.
And that goes to anything door to door, right? You can be going door to door and selling pest control. Like, people don't have disposable income right now. Most people.
No, right? They don't.
And so right now, like, I just did not feel that, like, I don't feel good about that, you know? And that's why I swallowed my pride. I did what I thought was best for my situation, for my wife, and, like, what was ethical, and just stepped down and took a really big pay cut, like a fucking massive pay cut.
Yeah.
And started delivering pizzas, because it's like, well, fuck, like, I still have to work, but now, like, I know that A, I'm doing it safely, B, you know, I'm providing something that people are already buying that probably shouldn't be buying in such commodity or, like, such quantities. You'd be shocked.
Oh, like, yeah. No,
how many times I deliver to the same house in the same week. You're like,
can't go get groceries.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, holy shit. But, you know, there's everybody's ramping up. Like, I should be, if I had it their way, if I did it their way, I'd be on a flight, like, right after this call, heading to North Dakota because the market's open. And it's like, you know, best of luck to this. And unfortunately, it's necessary for a company that just went public, right? That, you know, is in I wouldn't say a shitty position, right? I think Vivint's going to be fine. I think most companies are going to be fine that have like at least done some kind of like preparation during these past like few weeks, right? But I wish the best for everybody. But I just hope it doesn't make the situation worse, right? Like people going door to door, it's not healthy, right? You knock on a door of like an 80-year-old woman, right? Yeah, she probably could use your service, whatever you're selling, right? But you, who has just talked to 20 people prior, shook their hands, shared the same air, whatever it is, now you're speaking to this woman who's been quarantined for 6 weeks, right? To keep herself healthy and, frankly, alive, right? Like, it's not a like you and I. I'm definitely not super healthy. I don't know what your situation is, Greg. But you know, if I get COVID, I probably won't die, right? Like I'm like 98% sure I won't die. I'll probably be miserable for a little bit or have no symptoms. I don't know, but I'm fairly certain I will not pass away from it,
right?
But I have my in-laws, my wife's grandparents, they're in their 80s. Like I have people that, you know, I have to think about. So even when I'm delivering pizzas, I keep my space. We're doing contactless delivery, right? And I have to sanitize everything. Like we take proper procedures to like prevent, to prevent as much as we can, right?
Yeah.
And there's no system that's perfect, but dude, it's so wacky. It is so wacky to live in these times right now where, you know, people want to carry on with their normal day to day, but you know, it's not possible.
It's not wacky. Possible.
Yeah.
I hope we can get through it. And I hope that we'll learn some shit through it. I think that, you know, what I was talking about with Americans need to hold our government accountable. I think that there is some growing sentiment of that. Like, I think people are starting to be like, wait, I don't have to just sit outside and wave my flag and, you know, jack off to the national anthem in order to be a patriot, right? Like,
right.
Maybe I can help my fellow neighbor and that's how I can best be a patriot. And I hope that people start realizing that. And I think that there is some of that sentiment growing.
Mm-hmm. I hope so too. Well, before we get off, let me ask you what are like maybe some of your routines right now while you're working from home.
My routines are, I honestly get up at the last moment, which I still have to take an hour to wake up. So now I just don't take an hour and a half to wake up and I don't have a commute. So I just get up and let the dog out, make coffee. But every morning my work has my team has just a meeting where we just sit and chat, drink coffee and talk about not work. And that's been probably the best thing so far, to help things stay normal. But other than that, you know, we got like a blow up hot tub. It was like $300 and it's basically like 80% of a hot tub. We try and hang out in that as much as we can, go on walks now that the snow's gone. It just kind of left in the last few days and hang out with my puppy and my fiance too much, you know? So nothing crazy, honestly.
What is Amy doing for work?
Amy works for a children's mental health nonprofit, and she is still able to be employed. She was working remotely as well. We're both working from home. I sit up in my makeshift office upstairs and she sits at the kitchen table downstairs and I go down and bug her too often, but we try and just do our work throughout the day and get it done.
Good. Are you guys still in the same townhome?
Yeah.
I love that place. Hey, do you still have my golf clubs? I just remembered that.
Oh, shit. Yeah, I got yours and I've got Gabe's. We actually started golfing a lot last summer, so that's coming handy.
That's awesome, dude.
So sick. We have a friend and she's our friend too. She's a LPGA rules official. And they have like a professional instructor that comes and stays with them every summer. So we learned how to golf a lot last summer and we're itching to get out and do it this summer, you know?
Golfing's fun, dude. Well, I'm glad they're being used, bro. Like I just remember that. I'm like, oh my goodness. Holy shit. It's been almost 4 years.
Yeah.
Hey, that's ridiculous. Well, I know you have to get to class, so I appreciate you being on this.
No worries.
Hopefully I can have you on again, because I want to be able to have like a 2-hour episode where you and I really get into some itty gritty shit about marketing and, you know, more soapboxes and stuff like that.
I got soapboxes, man.
Bro, me too. I can rant like a motherfucker. That's why I started a podcast.
Well, all right. Let me say to the Finns, I think this is how you say it. Hey, hey. Is that how you say goodbye in Finnish? That's what this website's telling me. So, hey, hey.
Yeah, I don't have no idea. I don't know. But I'm sure they'll let us know in the comments. No, awesome. I don't know. All right. Later, Greg. Bye. All right, Contians, I hope you guys enjoyed the episode. Feel free to like and subscribe and comment down below some of your favorite aspects of the show. Also, you can find me and join me on Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and that's it. Pretty much all iConti even. There'll be the links in the description. You guys can follow me there. Also, if you haven't already checked out philosapothecary.com, that is my new online CBD retailer, where you can find some of the most affordable, high-quality CBD tinctures anywhere on the internet, right there on that site. And right now, during this whole COVID, we are doing free shipping on all orders. So feel free to check it out at philosapothecary.com. That's philosapothecary.com, and the link will be down in the description. I will have a new episode for you guys on Wednesday, and I hope y'all have a great first half of the week. Peace.